Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this 27th of February. It is a Wednesday, and it's very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce the panel to you. We'll get started. We have an abbreviated panel this morning because at 10 o'clock we will be taking NPR coverage of Michael Cohen's testimony before the House Oversight Committee. Committee Chairman Elijah Cummings will be has already said that the committee is going to question Cohen about topics including, they're going to ask about the Russia effort. We'll see how much they get out of Cohen. Also, about the president's compliance with campaign finance and tax laws. The statement that Michael Cohen is expected to read at 10 o'clock has already been released. We'll talk about that in just a few moments. Let me introduce our panel to you as we get started. Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith is with us. Good morning, Jen. How are
Aloha.
You?
Aloha.
Nice to have you here, as always. And former New York State Senator and SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor Terry Gibson is in the house. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Nice to have you here. And WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning, sir.
Ho.
All right. We are ready to go. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. So as I mentioned, the Michael Cohen testimony is expected, and we are going to hear this just in about 45 minutes. The hearing begins at 10 a.m., and we will be covering it live throughout the day. Just one little note is that we've already been notified by NPR, and I'll just notify you. They'll do it as well. But there is some adult language in the testimony, so just be aware of that. That is coming. But they'll warn you as well as far as what is written is expected to include some expletives. Basically, nothing that we have not heard before in the sense of this president with S-hole countries and so forth. So that is what we're expecting. However, it is expected to be potentially damaging revelations. He said that he planned that the president knew that WikiLeaks planned to publish hacked Democratic National Committee emails, according to the written testimony, and it is some fairly explosive claims. They have the check, and he is the check that he was given as president to pay off a porn star to not talk about the relationship with the president. In the testimony, he said he was a presidential candidate who knew that Roger Stone was talking with Julian Assange about a WikiLeaks drop of Democratic National Committee emails. And he also said that I talked about the hush money payments, copies of financial statements from 2011 and 2013 that he gave to institutions as Deutsche Bank. A copy of an article with Mr. Trump's handwriting on it that reported on the auction of a portrait of himself. He arranged for the bidder ahead of time and reimbursed the bidder from the account of his nonprofit charitable foundation, with the picture now hanging in one of his country clubs. And copies of letters that Cohen wrote at Trump's discretion that threatened his high school colleges and college boards not to ever release his grades or SAT scores.
Well, it's really quite something.
So there's
yep.
All right, so there's so
okay,
there's
so
a potential
high crimes and misdemeanors, right? Now, we know that they can say the Congress could impeach him if it were on based on just what we're hearing right now, you know, that he was paying off porn stars and others to avoid it, but it doesn't have to be breaking the law. You can only project that if Obama had been caught paying off a porn star, he'd be with this Republican Senate, he'd be out of there.
But if he's in one of these things, he's on a speakerphone talking with Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, and Julian Assange. Now, mm-hmm. if that is true, isn't that collusion?
Well, you have to remember what's already happening right now is we're seeing, regardless of what's in this testimony, we are already seeing right now that the Republicans in the Senate, the Republicans in the House, and all the Republican operatives are on every news channel, every outlet, beginning to do everything they can to call out Michael Cohen as a liar.
And the jerk from Florida who put that terrible tweet out there about you know, his
Cohen's family or Cohen's
family, and had to and has now had to rescind it, and wrote to the speaker that he was terribly sorry. Not at all. It's like when you say something in front of the jury and the judge says, "Can't say it. You can't say that." And you say, "Oh, I'm sorry."
But the please jury, forget that he said that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it also just goes to show like how willing you know these parties are willing to go to protect, you know, what they have and try to make excuses. And when do you say enough is enough? And when do you really look at the law? And, you know, I think when you look at the finances involved, whether it's the payoff check, what have you, it exceeds the legal limit. You know, when do you just prosecute crimes as crimes?
Well, you have to accept. See, here's their fiction. You have to accept, of course, the idea that he was paying, that Cohen was ordered to pay, or just keep it out of the election cycle. He's saying, no, I was just paying her off. And that's the difference, right? I mean,
well, and as president, right?
Yes, you'd have to believe that. It's one thing for me to believe it, or you, Jen, or, you know, any of us. But the fact is, you'd have to prove somehow that that was why he gave her the hush money.
Well, you know, the big question is the testimony that we're going to hear today and the questions that he's going to answer today going to reveal enough information that's going to change the dynamics so the Republicans in the Senate in Washington are going to all of a sudden decide in large numbers to go against the president?
And we know that's not going to happen.
And is the Republican base across the country that keeps this president, that got this president in office and will try to keep him
and
in
we
office.
Know that's not going to happen.
So why is it not happening? And I've been thinking a lot about this. The reason it's not happening is because you have to look at the bigger picture. Regardless of how you feel about Donald Trump and regardless of how the Republicans feel about Donald Trump, look at what they've been able to achieve. They have been able to get two new conservative Supreme Court justices with the looming possibility of a third one. They have been able to deregulate and slash environmental policy. They have been able to defund Planned Parenthood. They have been able to enable white nationalism. So they are achieving so many of the goals they have been fighting for so long. They may dislike this president, but when they look at what they're achieving in return, this is what keeps the dynamics the way it is. Plus, we are living in a time where it's very different than Watergate, where the American public has these shelters, these bubbles they can go to. You can go to the left bubble, you can go to the right bubble, and you can seek protection and find lots and lots of people there that believe what you want to believe. And so it's very, very difficult for this individual today to say anything that can change that dynamic.
And I think today, for me anyways, today's hearing is a little bit of a diversion because also at the end of the day, if Mueller does have the goods, then that case will also be able to prove what we've been hearing all along. And this is just, you know, a piece of, you know, maybe a bigger breadcrumb than normal, but, you know, part of it on the trail.
I read somewhere, I wish I could quote my sources correctly, but I don't remember where, that there had been an informal or formal agreement between the congressional investigators and Mueller that the Russian thing would not be brought up during this time because he's not done with his investigation.
Well, that's it's a continuing investigation, so yeah. Anything he says there can't.
Well, they do refer to issues about Russia in this testimony. He does.
Yeah.
He doesn't get into great detail, but they do talk about the Trump Tower in Russia. They do talk about but it's not in great detail.
In fact, I want to clarify something I said earlier about the phone call. In the testimony, Cohen will allege that in 2016, he witnessed Trump taking a phone call from Stone, Roger Stone, who was on speakerphone. Mr. Stone told Trump that he had just gotten off the phone with Julian Assange, and then Mr. Assange told Mr. Stone that within a couple of days there would be a massive dump of emails that would damage Hillary Clinton's campaign. Cohen is expected to say that in his testimony. Trump responded, according to Cohen, wouldn't that be great?
But that, Joe, but that's still three steps, if you think about it. It's, you know, it's Stone, it's telling the president,
right,
and the rest. So it's not the kind of thing that John Dean said, okay, there's a tape and there's a smoking gun and here it is. It's a couple of steps. Now, there'll be people listening to me right now and say, come on, Alan, cut it out. You know, it's enough.
Well, he's saying that he was aware in advance of the meeting set up by his son, Donald Trump Jr., and the Russians at Trump Tower, right. And they have long denied that, of course.
Yes.
And
that's
also,
a good one.
And Cohen will also tell Congress that he witnessed Trump Jr. telling his father the meeting is all set. So I agree with you. There is not that.
And they're going to say you're a liar. You're a liar. He
well,
never
and,
said
and
that.
And I think that's the matter of this case, too, is how will credibility clash with facts? How will I think in this new shifting political landscape, for reasons that are beyond me, it is influencing the way justice is delivered and the way we kind of consume and develop public opinion too. But also, I think how these decision makers are adjudicating what's happening.
I'm curious by the White House approach that has so far been, why would you believe these these disgraced lying felons? Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, Michael Cohen. Why is the case not being made of, okay, why was the president's entire inner circle made up of felons?
Handpicked.
We just had the Emmys.
Oscars,
yeah, and they handed out the statuettes. But the Chutzpah Award, which was not awarded, should go to Sarah Sanders, who said, as you say, Joe, how can you talk about Michael Cohen being a liar when the Washington Post has already added up, last time I looked, it was months ago, 7,000 lies from the president.
If Jen mentioned, too, she was just talking about how it's interesting how justice and the facts are playing out in modern day politics. I think all we have to do to kind of get a sense of what's going to happen today is look back at the recent trial for Brett Kavanaugh. Look at how that testimony played out and look at how contentious it was. And look at how many facts were there. Look at how many witnesses were brought in and look at how many documents were put forth. And all of that was said could not move the Republican Senate. In a manner to vote against
the only thing that's going to move those guys is, Terry, is going to be the day that they put their finger up in the wind and say, uh-oh, I looked at a poll and now is the time I have to jump ship. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen until their own personal politics and welfare is threatened.
And I think that's an interesting thing that's happening right now is that, incidentally, you've got Trump over in Vietnam right now, and then you've got
with his best friend,
and then you've got this case with the House decision on the border wall funding all happening, which is threatening the ability of Congress as we speak.
One of the things that struck me in reading, and I didn't read it from cover to cover, but just picking out pieces of the testimony that was released that Michael Cohen is expected to deliver. I just wonder, eyes on the prize as far as of what is germane to the investigation and what is germane to, as Alan said, high crimes and misdemeanor. But we have a lot in here of him saying that he's claimed that the bone spur thing. He said, "You think I'm stupid? I wasn't going to Vietnam." Cohen said that Trump had told him. He said that Trump repeatedly made racist comments about African Americans while driving through a poor neighborhood in Chicago. Trump allegedly told Cohen that only black people could live that way. He told Cohen added that Trump said that African Americans would never vote for him because they were too stupid. Those are all damning things, I guess. But I don't know if that what purpose does that serve in this context of testifying before Congress?
Well, and I think that's where the credibility issue comes up. Can you just fight with name calling? And I think, again, in this current political arena, no, it doesn't make a strong enough case because you have name calling and slinging and characterization labels, flying left and right. And it's sort of a low blow, in my opinion, and it's sort of a known fact in some ways, the way we've seen, this President Bayer. And it's also nothing new. If you look at what's happening in our country, I would add misogyny to that list. I think you got to come up with something a little stronger, yeah. aside from
absolutely right.
from making those claims.
Yeah, we don't need Michael Cohen to tell us that Donald Trump's a racist. We know that. We don't need him to tell him that he's a con man. We know that. We know that he's a liar and a cheat. We know all of these things. The American public knows all of this and has known it well before he was ever elected. The big issue here is, will anything come out that will change the dynamics of that solid Republican base that continues to support the president? If that happens, and then, as Alan said, Republican senators stick their finger up in the air to see if the winds change direction, that's what it's going to take.
What would it take?
That's what it's going to take.
What would it take?
Well, you know, it's sadly hard for me to really envision that there is that thing that could change that base, because they're so solidly behind him. But I suppose if he murdered someone, I suppose if he was on record of stealing an enormous amount of money, or I think that the issue with his taxes, not reporting his taxes, not paying his taxes, could be that thing.
Well, that's a crime.
Yeah, that's a crime. Yeah, but and it's a big crime. It's not just a little crime. It's a major crime. So I think, you know, if we discover that he has not paid his taxes or a substantial portion for 20 years, that could do it. But I'm not sure any of that's going to come out today.
That would be interesting, you know, that very timely, as it's tax season and you have a lot of disgruntled people out there already, if that portion would come out. But again, this is just a unique position where anything that we as lay people would have to provide or do to maintain our jobs, there's just been, it's been so elastic on these rules. You know, so much has been bent to make accommodations for this leader, for this role.
I continue to really do believe ultimately that, you know, the American people put this president there, and they're going to have to take him out by an election. It's going to have to happen that way.
When, and we mentioned in just about a half hour, we'll be going to the coverage of NPR coverage, and Michael Cohen will be testifying. The testimony is expected to last between 8 and 10 hours, which is a long time. We should mention that
Senate had him 13 hours yesterday.
Yesterday, and he is expected to come back tomorrow. So a lot. This is the only public session, we should note. And but we have this, of course, this testimony, the opening, those 20 pages, and that is certainly going to gobble up the news cycle this morning. But I'm sure there'll be a lot more coming out this afternoon.
And
as
I
more
would
questions
say, you know,
asked.
In the next 24 hours, folks, look at other stories that are happening in the news cycle too. I mean, the transcript will be there. You know, and I don't think any immediate action will come out of, not to interrupt before
the break, but I want to say when Warner came out, Senator Warner came out and said this is the worst thing that he has ever had to deal with, and he's not going to say more than that. I have a feeling that some stuff got said in the Senate session that may not get said in the open session yesterday, and that may have had to do with the Russians.
That's also really interesting. A possibility.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have letters. We welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org will continue after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion of what's going on. As I mentioned, at 10 o'clock, President Trump's longtime personal attorney, Michael Cohen, will testify before the House Oversight Committee. We'll be covering that live beginning at 10 a.m. We do have letters. We'll go to those, and then we'll move on to some other topics and get it all in before 10 o'clock.
So Lisa from Copoquag says, I hope Nancy Pelosi censures Matt Gaetz for threatening a witness for the remaining Trump lemmings. It's time to get Trump mafia out of our government. I agree with Alan that we only have one shot at impeachment, but maybe Cohen's statement and hopefully facts will persuade the 33% of Americans who are loyalists to this, quote, president to finally see the light. Trump and his family are more than likely to be tried and convicted on RICO charges in New York State than by impeachment. What does the panel say about this? I don't say much. Pretty early, and I don't think that 33% shows any signs of moving. Ed says, 1933, redo? Good morning. Comparisons of today's Senate Republicans trading away their constitutional prerogatives in support of the executive branch and a blatantly fake national emergency, in quotes, to the German Reichstag voluntarily relinquishing its powers to a rising popular dictator in 1933 are painfully inevitable. That's Ed from Del Mar. No, I think there are institutions in place. My own reaction to that is that while I don't think Trump would stop at that, I don't think we're in that position right now. I think with the House being in Democratic hands, it's very unlikely you'll see anything like that. And Russ says, nothing new. Mr. Cohen concedes that his reticence regarding Russian contacts during the campaign was the result of his own point of view and not a work for hire. The rest of his testimony regarding Russian involvement on the election is largely hearsay. The overall allegations of sleaziness on the part of the president is nothing new. On balance, nothing will change Mr. Trump unless sanctioned Russian money is found in a Trump Enterprise account. Steve says, a warning from NPR that the testimony contains adult language. Oh, good. It's time someone is talking like an adult. The childish behavior we're dredging through this administration has finally grown up. Thanks for your discussions. That's from Steve, the photographer. Let's see here. Good morning, panel, says Roger. Mr. Cohen's admission from opening comments, as noted by New York Times, seems to confirm what many people have already suspected. I'm ashamed because I know what Trump is. He's a racist. He's a con man. He's a cheat. That these statements will be supported by documentation should certainly be adequate reason for the House immediately to begin impeachment proceedings, pursuing several actions of the president, any one of which could be considered an impeachable offense. Why the need to wait for a Mueller report, which would certainly include more details confirming some of these actions? And that's from Roger in Utica. Roger, I couldn't disagree with you more. You wait for the Mueller report. We have no idea, nor do you, sir. I have any idea as to what's in that report. But as the previous letter writer said, in agreement with me, you don't get more than one shot in impeachment. So you wait until you have the goods, to me. Jen, do you agree with that?
The case that a lot of this is hinging on. I think it's, that information.
Terry made the point earlier, and I think it's a good one, that, this president will probably be taken out by an election.
I think that's probably the more likely.
It's probably what should happen. Well,
no president has ever been removed from office by impeachment trial.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, that hasn't happened because it's very hard to do. Just look at this resolution they're trying to pass. They can't even get a resolution passed in the Senate that says that the president is exceeding his use of emergency powers.
And would any of this happen within a year and a half?
No, and I think that's the timing of it, too, is going to be a big deal.
So, how do you get the Senate now to change course just because we're saying that Donald Trump's a liar and a cheat and a thief? They know this already.
And there's a lot of others in the world.
and now from the other side, from Michael, who says, so what? Trump isn't politically correct. Who cares? He was elected because he doesn't care about being politically correct. Today's politicians have made being politically correct a job itself instead of doing their jobs they were hired for. Trump's doing some good things. My only complaint is I wish he could be more environmentally friendly. Do you think? Okay. And then also from Deanne, who says, good morning. I feel that the Trump base will not change because no matter what is proved against them, they see him as their only support in white supremacy and making them feel great for who they are. Pardon me, superior to the others, in quotes. Thank you for your great show. And that's from Deanne. And thank you for writing. And Joan says, words matter. I wish words that have a positive connotation would not be used in describing Trump or the GOP. Successfully bringing about a reach, a desired objective level or result by effort, skill, or courage. Quote, he achieved his ambition to become a journalist. In other words, they stole Obama's right to a Supreme Court pick, etc. I feel the same way about calling Trump brilliant, etc. What has been used in the past is conniving, insidious, corrupt, etc. is more accurate. Joan from Glenmont.
All right. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Let us move ahead and talk about the other big story today, which is that the President of the United States is in Vietnam and meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. President Trump said he believed his meetings, quote, will be equal to or greater than their summit in Singapore last year.
And that's not so hard.
The president says he is satisfied with progress of nuclear talks with North Korea as the summit opens. And all of this is going on, and obviously there'll be probably some split screened today as we see the hearing and the activities that are happening in Hanoi. The White House has also banned four journalists from covering the Trump-Kim dinner because of shouted questions. That has just been reported.
What was that?
So reporters
were yelling out shouted questions.
Yeah, they were asking questions during the greed.
Associated Press, Bloomberg News, The Los Angeles Times, and Reuters were excluded from covering the dinner because of what White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said were sensitivities over shouted questions in the previous sprays. Among the questions asked of Trump was one about Michael Cohen. So the White House is restricting press access.
Which emphasizes the fact that this is posturing on both sides. You know, this is a chance for Trump to look good and say, like, look, I'm having another meeting. I'm shaking hands. We're talking. And it's the same thing for, you know, the North Korean chairman in that at the end of the day, I think neither of them know they're going to get what they exactly want. And
well, what does Trump want? And that's the interesting thing. You know, in the beginning, he wanted denuclearization. Now he says, I'm satisfied just to have the assurance that they're not going to do any more testing, which he already comes into this meeting with.
Right.
So no major change.
There's nothing being talked about that will actually make a difference. And again, I think this is just a matter of Trump wanting to look good for, you know, what is he got, like a Nobel Peace Prize bid or something?
Absolutely.
Out there. But it doesn't accomplish anything. It doesn't accomplish the issues with North Korea's economy. You can say stop testing all you want. It doesn't prevent North Korea from selling the technology or investing it in other ways. And we have no inspectors. It doesn't put any emphasis on sending, you know, independent inspectors over there to get a full picture of really what's going on. Nobody knows.
Well, as Michael Cohen will testify today, this is Donald Trump as a person that is driven purely by ego. It's not about what is right for the country. It's not about what is right for the people that he represents. It's about what's good for Donald Trump. And so his only goal, in my opinion, is to get on camera what appears to be the leader of one of the most oppressed nations in the world, a dictator, to act like he is respecting the president, to act like that he is acknowledging the power of the president of the United States. That's what Donald Trump wants. And if he achieves that, I think he's going to be happy. I think that's all he has ever wanted. Mm-hmm. And he will leave there saying that it's a success. He wants the approval of this dictator. And it's sad on a day where Michael Cohen is testifying that the best friend that our president can find is the leader of a communist country.
Formal talks between Mr. Trump and Mr. Kim are to take place on Thursday. The United States wants North Korea to dismantle its nuclear weapons program. The North Koreans are seeking numerous concessions, including an end to punishing sanctions. Critical moment for Mr. Trump, who vowed to solve the North Korea problem before his inauguration, and for Mr. Kim, who needs to make good on promises to nurture the North Korean economy. So far, there's really only been a handshake, a dinner, which is not open to the press, and tomorrow the talks will commence, and we'll know more then.
Yeah, maybe this is an improper analogy. I have a very close relative who is dying of cancer, you know, and until the very end, many cancer patients believe that the one thing up till the very end that will save them is some new research, some new breakthrough that will save them. I can't blame them for any of that. And I think that Trump is thinking likewise. The analogy is the one thing that will save me is a Nobel Prize. So I'll do anything I can to make sure that that's going to happen. You know, even by limiting what I'm asking for in these so-called talks to the point that it's something I already have.
Yeah, I think analogy aside, I don't think there is going to be a breakthrough in this instance. And again, you know, Kim Jong-un doesn't have a lot to work with. I mean, this is an act of self-preservation on his behalf of meeting with our president because he's invested that entire nation's money into these nuclear efforts. And his people have suffered for it. And, you know, as his people continue to suffer, it's I think that's going to be the breakthrough. When is their nation going to break? And, you know, if anything does break in South Korea, then you're really going to have a whole different outcome in this matter.
Which is why, you see the sanctions coming up prominently as an issue here, and why the president keeps talking about Vietnam and how they've turned themselves around, and that he hopes that North Korea will do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think the challenge to that is, you know, years and years and years, that country has been kept in the dark because it's only had a state media source. Now, thanks to technology, and people know otherwise. So I think the North Korean people are not so apt to be fooled to say that even removing these sanctions are going to save their livelihoods.
I also think it just shows a lack of understanding of world history on Trump's part to really compare Vietnam and Korea. They're two very different countries, two very different cultures, two very different wars, and the situation is just completely different. And I don't think there's really any comparison. I think that it's really a sad day when the President of the United States has made a top priority to spend his time sitting at the table with one of the worst dictators in the country. In the world, I'm sorry.
I want to make it worse.
Yeah, no, that's right. Thank you for that correction.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue, and we'll talk for about 10 more minutes before we go up to our coverage at the top of the hour of the Michael Cohen hearings. We will do that right after this short break. All right, 10 minutes to go, and we'll get in as much as we can in those 10 minutes before we go over to live coverage. We were talking about North Korea. I do want to mention the other story, of course, is that the House voted to block Trump's national emergency declaration about the border. This happened yesterday. The House voted to overturn President Trump's declaration of a national emergency on the Mexican border, with just 13 Republicans joining Democrats to try to block the effort to divert funding to a border wall without congressional approval. House Republican leaders kept affections low after feverishly working to assuage concerns among rank-and-file members about protecting congressional powers and about the precedent that Mr. Trump could be setting for Democratic presidents to use for their own purposes.
You know, what's interesting about that is that Mitch McConnell is not yet bringing that resolution to the Senate floor and is probably going to drag it out for weeks, if not longer, until he can find a way to get enough votes to vote against it.
Yeah, and I think that's McConnell's MO, right? It's to not make any decisions any quicker, and to, again, not make any definitive action.
He has to herd all his cats now. I mean, that's going to be very difficult. I was amazed that Elise Stefanik, by the way, who is a known Trumper,
she
split with him.
13.
On this, that indicates something to me. I'm not sure what, but it indicates to me that the Republicans, in their inner minds, know that all is not well here.
Mm-hmm. And some of them are in key states too, like Texas. The representative from Texas, Florida, even in some other northern border states, two from Michigan. What does this say? And who will actually follow through? I think that's important to watch.
I think Stefanik is in one of those seats where she can afford to take this step and vote against him and not be in a position where she's really vulnerable.
Yeah.
Other Republican senators and House members are not. They are in districts where they really must side with the president, or they may very well be walking out of office.
It'd be hard to believe that she'll get a primary, a Trump-backed primary on something like this.
It's just a resolution. It's a resolution that the president will ultimately veto if it did pass, and it's really, I don't think, that big of a risk for her.
Mm-hmm. We have the letter, Alan?
We do. It comes from a John who says, great discussion and best regards. But he also says, brace yourselves. Uh-oh. As it becomes more obvious to Democrats, they are about to lose the narrative on Russia conspiracy. They are going to get even more shrill and nuts than usual. No FISA warrant without dossier, which means no Russian collusion story without dossier, which means no Mueller special counsel without dossier paid for by the Clinton DNC. Prepare for mass nervous meltdowns as Mueller reports reveals in capital letters nothing involving Russian collusion. It's about to get really weird. Great discussion, says John.
You mean it's not weird already?
It's pretty weird.
It's pretty, pretty weird.
But the letter does indicate what I think a lot of Republicans are doing each night, getting down behind their bed and say, I hope this is all so, that there will be nothing and that Mueller will come up with nothing. But Mueller has already indicted all these people, including all these Russians. Very hard to see how he gets nothing.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think in the bigger picture, you know, 2020 is right around the corner, and what's going to happen, who's going to make the changes. One of the other interesting headlines from today that struck me is just what was happening with the Chicago mayoral race. And,
right.
There was so much packed into that, you know, story from just the voter turnout, which was low, almost historically low, you know, narrowly missed it by a percentage point, but 34% roughly. Whittled down from 21, a pool of 21, which is almost what we have in our Democratic presidential race now, you know, down to 14 candidates who ran. And the outstanding ones who are headed to the April 2nd runoff are two African-American women, you know, a big 180 from Rahm Emanuel. And then at the same time, you had these elections, you had those everyday issues that people were dealing with. There's a shooting by one of the polls. There were two electorate judges who were removed. There's other issues with technology, and that's what we can't lose sight of either. We still have this everyday life problems that are chronic that this country has to deal with.
Back to Chicago, one of these two women will become the first African-American woman to lead Chicago, the third largest city in the United States of America. Both, I will say, have very cool names, yes. Lori Lightfoot and Toni Preckwinkle.
Yes.
And one will prevail. As of April, and as you said, that is a far cry from mm-hmm. Rahm Emanuel.
Mm-hmm. And if they're either able to accomplish and make the changes that do need to happen in Chicago, boy, does that set a leadership standard for the country.
What does this say about a country that right now, on the Democratic side, has two? If you count Biden and Bernie Sanders,
and by the way, Biden, just as an interjection, is now indicating that, you know, he's ready to roll.
So if you count Biden, and, so you have Biden and Bernie Sanders, two older white men that seem to be the top of the ticket right now. Things have certainly changed, and then you have an old white male that's representing the Republicans right now too. What does it say about the state of our country, where in the third largest city, two African American women have mm-hmm. Won the nomination?
Well, and these nominees are among a whole group, a cohort of women from diverse backgrounds who have ascended to leadership right now. They're definitely going to be challenged by a lot of them are going to be new to this role. Yes, Preckwinkle, I think, has served 20 years on the Cook County board there, and she's president. And the other one is, you know, a very seasoned attorney. But, you know, these conditions aren't without challenges. But it does say something that this is being made possible, that voters are paving the way for this change, too. And going back to what you said, what will voters do in 2020 with the leadership?
Well, the country is just becoming more and more and more diverse every single day.
Well, you know, if I was a Republican United States senator and I was looking at what happened in the House of Representatives last time, my hands would be shaking. I'd be worried.
They should be worried. They should be worried. It will change sooner or later.
I have to say, though, just what Jen said a moment ago, I think is perhaps the most disturbing part about all of this is that like just take Chicago as a microcosm, and you have all of these candidates who are running. The city is fighting very, very, very hard. It has great challenges, and yet you have an historically low voter turnout.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we continue to see that, and if all of these problems mount to a point where people say, all right, I'm out.
You're not going to see that, Joe, with a Trump election. I can guarantee that. It's going to be one of the highest elected numbers of elected people turning out of people who vote.
And it wasn't out. And it wasn't and it wasn't in November, right? We saw those numbers, but you just hope people don't become too complacent.
Well, the Democratic primary, presidential primary, is going to be the true test. If people are going to get burnt out, that's a place where it could happen. I mean, I'm very concerned about how that's all going to play out with that many candidates vying for that one position at a time where we are experiencing so many difficulties in the country.
I'm going to predict when it all comes down to it, it's going to be Bernie versus Biden. That's where the concentrated effort will be. Biden representing the moderate part of the Democratic Party, and Bernie being the progressive.
Do we make anything out of the shakeups in the Bernie campaign so quickly into after his announcement yesterday?
Well, he knows he didn't win last time because he didn't get the black vote, and he also has been accused of a certain amount of sexism in the way his campaign was run. So, you know, he's not a stupid man. He says, okay, I got to make some changes here.
Well, it all comes down to who can win the electoral states that are really pivotal in this election. And I just don't know. I'm not sure either one of those candidates can do that. It's yet to be seen. We have to see what the message is and what the landscape is going
to
look like.
It's more likely to me that it'll be Biden at this stage to capture those votes.
All right, we're going to end here this morning. We're going to go a little bit early because we're going to go over to coverage of Michael Cohen testifying before the House Oversight Committee, and we see everyone taking their place, so we're going to throw it over to National Public Radio. Thanks to Terry, thanks to Jen, thanks to Alan. We will be back for our normal doings tomorrow, and we'll have the hearings throughout the day. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.